So we're here this evening to talk about reflective listening. So who would tell me what reflective listening is?
You would like to know what reflective listening is?
Yes, I would like to receive a definition of reflective listening.
So you're looking for a definition of reflective listening?
Yeah, I feel that it would be really helpful for me and everyone else if we could have a definition of reflective listening.
So that would be helpful for you and everyone else, you feel?
Yeah, I feel it would. Okay, we didn't have a definition, but we did have a pretty good example, didn't we? So what was going on with that?
What did you notice?
Yeah.
Well, the person listening to you was reflecting back pretty much verbatim what you were looking at.
So I would make a statement, and I would hear coming back to me almost exactly what I said. And then from that point, I would make my next statement, which was also reflected back, almost verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
But not quite, was it? It wasn't exactly. What was different? What kept it from being verbatim?
I just seem to emphasize the key words rather than just echoing you.
Yes. Yeah. It was all there, wasn't it? Everything was included. It wasn't exactly the way I said it. So in one sentence, I think I noticed that what I put in the beginning of the sentence came at the back, at the end of the sentence, and what I put at the end of the sentence came at the beginning of the sentence, which made it sound terribly new and interesting. But in fact, it was exactly what I had said. Now, why would anybody want to do that? Why would we want to reflect what people say?
Because people rarely hear themselves when they speak. And if we can be a mirror for that person, then they'll have a chance to hear back what they've said and might be able to hear it in a different way than they've been able to before.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I was really concentrating on what I wanted to communicate.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I'm looking at. I'm not listening. I'm looking at what I want to say. So if you say that back to me, then I get a chance to actually hear what I said. Because I'm not identified with what you're saying. I am identified with what I'm saying.
And you don't have to do anything. You don't have any extra baggage to deal with when that comes back. All you have is your own, what's going on for you, and not what's going on for the other person.
Uh-huh. So you're not putting any spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not reinterpreting what I'm saying so that I will know that you really understood what I said.
I'm not leading you.
Not leading me, not coming up with a better idea about where I should be going with this.
Mm-hmm. Not trying to make you see anything in particular. Just giving you back what you put out.
Yeah.
So that you can see it for yourself.
Yeah, just giving me a chance to hear what I'm looking at. When we're talking with somebody, does anybody know the experience of just waiting for them to get to the end of the sentence? So that when you're just... So I can jump in here and say what it is that I want to say. I have no idea actually what they said. They just said something that triggered me, got me excited about saying something, and so as soon as they shut up, I'll say what it is that I'm going to say.
In fact, I quit listening.
Quit listening, yeah. The moment that something caught my attention, I quit listening.
What strikes me, too, about what was just brought up is that I think one of the most powerful things for me has been having someone reflect and knowing that they believe that I'm adequate to my own experience. And being able to feel that through the fact that they're not assuming they have to steer me in any certain ways, but there's a belief that I'm adequate to seeing what it is that I'm looking for, in a sense.
It's your life. It's your view of life. And that's what you're attempting to get clear about. Not my view of your life,
mm-hmm.
but your view. So there's a great deal of respect in that. isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Of being able to and willing to just get out of the way and be a mirror for somebody as they work through their own life experience. And their, you know, we get so California with this, but it does come down to their experience of their life experience. Because it doesn't matter what's going on with anybody else around, anybody else who knows you, who hears you, who sees you. It doesn't matter. It only matters what you see. So there's a great deal of respect and trust in that. Yeah. So, in a way, it's very relaxing for the facilitator, isn't it? If I were responsible for your salvation,
that would be stressful.
But all I really have to do is listen, because I do, don't I? Or I'm not going to be able to reflect. I've got to listen to what you're saying, and then I simply have to say it back to you so that you can hear it.
I think I just saw something for the first time about this, which is that as the speaker, I think that a good portion of what I'm doing, which isn't listening to myself, is watching for cues for that glaze over, watching for cues that the other person is actually going off on their own train of thought. When I'm being listened to reflectively, the person is really intently listening to me and not going off on those.
Yes.
So there's another element of the relationship that happens because of all that.
Yes. You remember in the little handout that we have, there's the cartoon. The little kid is standing next to Dad's chair saying, "Dad, you've got to listen with your eyes, not just with your ears."
Yeah.
Because Dad is reading the paper. Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah, I'm listening.
Yeah.
And all the signals are, "No, you're not."
Exactly.
So to be really there and engaged with the person, it's a wonderful practice for the listener.
Yeah, I think it's a real powerful experience for people a lot of times when they first have the opportunity of being reflected in that way, because they haven't been listened to before.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like there's just a lot of, at least for myself, there's a lot of energy that goes into, I want to just get someone to hear me.
Yes.
I just want to make some kind of an imprint on somebody somewhere.
Yes.
so they can hear me.
Yes.
And there's all that energy that goes into that, and then suddenly there's someone who's actually listening, and I know it because I can hear it back.
Yes.
And then I don't have to put that energy out there that way anymore, and I can actually listen to myself and see what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, that what we learn to do as children is try to get what we want from somebody else. So if I can get somebody else to listen to me, it's going to be meaningful. And we lose sight of the fact that, no, I need to listen to them. That's what's going to be meaningful.
Yeah.
So it's a tremendous gift, isn't it?
Yeah.
To provide that environment for somebody to hear themselves.
Yeah. And it's also a gift from the side of being the facilitator, because the same process goes on internally. And I know reflective listening, it seems like for me, gets more and more subtle all the time as I see the agenda I put on how I respond to people.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I'm reflecting back. I'm being as much of a mirror as possible, and I see, no, I've got something going on about this. And there's another layer underneath that I can access that's less or more detached, or I'm more absent in it.
Mm-hmm. Which is the mark of a good facilitator, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
To be absent.
Right.
You truly are just a mirror. There's no facilitator personality in it. There's just the person who's being reflected.
Yeah. And so I can learn that for myself. And if I can be absent for myself in that way inside, then it feels like that's where everyone's getting taken care of.
Uh-huh.
I don't have an agenda about all of the people inside, and I can practice that outside with real people. With people with bodies.
People. Because we are, we're just a, now there's a word that is not coming to me.
Representation?
Representation. So we learn to interact in that way, as you're saying, with external people, which has to be in quotes because I don't think there are any such things. But and if there were, we wouldn't recognize them. We'd be so busy projecting over them that we wouldn't actually know. So we do this with one another, and then we get to practice being that way with ourselves. That same respectful, no agenda, being willing to get out of the way and just be a mirror for all of the folks, all of the aspects of the personality inside of us, which is really a gift to ourselves. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that people say a lot about reflective listening is, you just sound like a parrot. I mean, don't you feel like an idiot just saying the same thing back that the person said? I mean, I've tried this with people, and they think I'm just stupid. What about it?
Well, there's a lot of personality there, isn't there? In terms of a good facilitator not being there.
So it's hard on both sides, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult for us as facilitators to be willing truly to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one piece of it.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we project that we sound like parents. And initially there's a discomfort with the process, and so there's a self-consciousness of the facilitator. But once we get accustomed to the process, then we get to actually listen.
Yes.
And it's interesting.
It is, isn't it? When I don't need to be there to be the center of everything, I can just be completely fascinated by what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know, facilitation just happens. We don't even have to try. I'm just so captivated by what you're saying. I so much want to hear you that I'm actually doing it automatically.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for me to make a distinction between listening and understanding, too, because there's times in facilitation where I don't actually, as a facilitator, understand what the other person is saying.
Yeah.
And when I make that effort to understand, I'm becoming a person who understands, and I'm no longer listening, I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful place where I'm interested, I'm listening, I'm as present as I can be, and I may or may not understand.
Yes. Which is when reflective listening really comes in handy, doesn't it? You're facilitating somebody and suddenly you realize, whoa, I don't know where this person is. If you were expected actually to be tracking, you'd be in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But if all you need to do is reflect, and it's miraculous, isn't it? The times when all of a sudden all the lights come on for this person and they get to this great place and they think you're a genius. And you don't know what they're talking about. So what about this idea that you need to not let people know what you're doing? You know that one?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm talking to my friend and I'm doing reflective listening, and what I get back is, stop doing that stuff. Don't do that stuff. You're doing that listening stuff. You guys do this all the time. Every week you're sitting around doing this. There's no secret, is there? We all come in, we sit down, get into little groups of threes. Somebody's the facilitator, somebody's the facilitated, and somebody is taking notes. Now, nobody's getting fooled. Right? And yet, does it work? What happens? Even though you know perfectly well, everything's going, it couldn't be more clear if the person were getting paid to facilitate you. But what happens?
I feel like it's not something that even when it's so blatant because the person is saying exactly what I said. Maybe they just started facilitating and they're not comfortable putting a word at the end of the sentence, or so they're saying exactly what I said. I find that what's so helpful to me is the experience of being heard and in that being accepted. So it feels as though by someone being that present with me in a discussion and stepping out of the way, there's a automatic acceptance that comes with that. And if the person wants to be really blatant about the acceptance, then that's fine with me. Because as Dave was saying, I feel like it's really been helpful for me to practice turning that in too. Before I came here, I don't think I'd ever felt that kind of acceptance. It's just a given that during this process, all can be said.
And there's no feeling of being cared about less because you know that's what the person is doing. To me, there is a greater sense of caring. Because the person willingly is setting themselves aside for that period of time and doing the very best they can just to be present to me. That's an amazing thing.
It is, and I think it's so amazing that it's contrary to what I feel like I've been taught my whole life. I mean, I've been taught that if you care, you know, you jump in there, you whatever it is.
You try to help.
Yeah, you try to help.
Problem solve. Yeah. You give them your point of view, the benefit of your wisdom.
And it's so interesting that it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. That the greatest, I think, service is actually in knowing that the other person is adequate to the experience and that you're willing to be there during their process.
Mm-hmm. I love to be facilitated, and of course I always know that that's what's happening around here. And I think the reason is just because I need help.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm looking at myself, I'm going to look at it, I'm going to start going off in all these conditioned ways, just going around the same track that I always go on. And every time I get reflected back, it's like, wake up. It's like, oh, thanks, right, that is what I... And I go off on my thanks, you know, I get reflected back, and it kind of keeps me on track.
Yes.
And I feel like an exploration, because every time I come back, I have kind of a view, mm-hmm. and I can go off in that direction or in that direction, and then I get lost,
uh-huh.
and then I get, the facilitator helps me wake up again,
yeah.
and then I have a view again.
Yeah, because when I'm talking about it inside my own head, I can say what it is that I say and then believe that and mm-hmm. then go to the next logical step and then believe mm-hmm. that and then take the...
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly I'm hearing somebody say, so what you're saying is... No, I didn't say that. Well, that's not what I meant. What I meant was... And then there I am kind of trying to slither over here somewhere and the person says it and I hear it.
Yeah.
And the person isn't trying to do anything to me. They're just saying, so this is where you are? Well, yeah, maybe this is what happened.
It's perfect because it's short circuit conditioning.
Yes.
Because we're supposed to believe it and not see it and then go on to the next thing.
Yes.
And then believe that and not see it and go on to the next thing.
Yes.
And so we're constantly having to see it.
And not believe it.
And not believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really helpful.
When I'm being facilitated, it takes the drama out of my beliefs. I'll say something and then the facilitator reflects that back and in a neutral tone of voice, and it's then I disidentify.
Yeah, because the person you're identifying with can't keep it up under those circumstances, right? Yeah. Yeah, because when you can't get that certain charge on it or that spin or that thing that makes it so meaningful. Yeah, because this person has just said, so you're really upset. So, am I hearing that this is the kind of thing that a person can do anywhere with anybody?
I have had people react rather strongly at times about, well, that's just what I said in response to my mirroring back, and I don't really have a place to go after that.
Well,
You know, it depends on who that is and what your relationship is and how fast you are and how fast they are. But one of the things that I've talked about before in facilitator practices is that one evening, this whole room full of people, and I was timing it, and there was a threesome sitting over here. And, they were a by-the-book group of people. And this one fellow was facilitating another fellow. And the guy who was talking said, "Well, I think that's it." There was a silence. The facilitator said, "So, you think that's it?" And I said, "Yeah, seems to be it." So, that seems to be it. I mean, at this point, it's getting painful for me. I don't know what they're going through. And it just went on like that. Finally, the person who was being facilitated just launched into, not at the facilitator, but into what was really going on. And it was impressive for me, because I quite honestly don't think I would have had nerve enough to just sit there and reflect that person over and over and over, when basically they were saying, "I don't want to talk about it anymore." And then, boom, it just all opened up and came out in a way that it wasn't going to under any other circumstances. So that's one of the things that I really enjoy most about reflective listening, is that at the point in the conversation when I think I have nowhere else to go, if somebody's reflecting me and they can leave me just sitting there, just basically reflect the silence, I'm going to be looking around inside for what else is there. And given enough time and enough space, very often what that is reveals itself. Again, you have to be careful, because if it's not somebody who is in agreement about what's going on, they can get annoyed. And of course, I would project that a lot of times people get annoyed for exactly that reason. You know, we're having this conversation to cover up what's going on, mm-hmm. not to get to the bottom of what's going on. And one of the places that I most often hear people with great resistance to reflective listening is in couples. Because couples want to relate the way they relate. They don't want to do this, reflect and listen and that sort of thing. Not all couples, obviously, and not all the time, but very often when it's at one of those places where reflective listening would be most helpful, that's where there's the most resistance to it.
My experience in reflective listening with another person who is that there's a certain vulnerability in being facilitated.
Ooh, yes.
And so in a couple, it's it can be this thing where one person is exposing a vulnerability. In essence, I'm putting my conditioning right out there on the rug. Mm-hmm. And then not only do you see it, I see it too, and it's doubly embarrassing because we're both looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems helpful in that kind of situation to make some kind of boundaries.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to be the facilitator for 20 minutes, and then you're going to be the facilitator for 20 mm-hmm. minutes. Or
mm-hmm.
Because there is a sense of, there can be an intense sense of vulnerability if there's a feeling like the ground isn't level.
Mm-hmm. Which is, again, an argument for not trying to fool anybody.
That's the worst.
This is what we're doing, and this is why. Mm-hmm. And we're in agreement about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, within that context, too, to have the, see if you can have the willingness to let the person do it the way they need to do it. However that is, if that includes 20 minutes of silence or...
Right.
So talk to me about what it's like to be the facilitator doing reflective listening. Can you go back to the time when it just felt awkward? When you did feel like Polly Parrot?
Being new to it, I still have a feeling of awkward. But what I'm looking at around it is that, in a compassionate way, it enables me to be present. It's almost like a condition that if I'm really going to listen to someone, I'm in a present condition,
uh-huh.
a present state.
Uh-huh.
So that becomes my focus, that there isn't this analysis of what's going on or what's being said or anything that has to do with conditioning. It's just the awareness of the process.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk about what happens when that isn't the state that you're in?
Then just go down to a conditioned path, and the eyes glaze over, and
they take a breath, and you have no idea
no
what you're
idea.
Reflecting. Uh-huh. So it is a wonderful check-in, isn't it, for how present I am. It's sort of like counting the breath or, you know, keeping your thumbs together when you're meditating or that sort of thing. These little check-ins for, ooh, I was not there for a period of time.
Yeah, and it's so helpful to be there as a facilitator,
mm-hmm.
to be present for the looking at the process of awareness within oneself, that there isn't an agenda about what is being said or how it is being said or a direction that it's going, but just to be present to and reflect back exactly what's being said.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that is the focus, and there is no loss of attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that what really comes up for me is there's no self-consciousness about it, because I'm not trying to be, as we talked about, a person projecting my personality and my understanding of this other person.
Yeah.
I'm just there to be the mirror.
Yeah.
I still find myself judging myself as a facilitator. I'm fine when I'm facilitating somebody else, but then the minute I'm listening to one of the other two facilitators, I think, oh my goodness, you're doing such a better job than I did. And it doesn't matter who I'm working with. I have that same experience. But of course, that's an experience I recognize outside of facilitating,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what do you do with that?
Well, it's a chance for me to look at that. And, you know, I can go down one path that says, I'm not going to attend any more facilitation sessions because I'm so lousy at this.
Mm-hmm.
And another is to say, well, so you're doing it again.
Uh-huh.
And there you go again. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. While you're continuing to do your reflective listening or while you're writing down whatever is going on,
mm-hmm.
and you just hear the voice that says that and suspect that no matter how you do it, the voice will say the same thing.
It'll say the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another piece of how beneficial it is for us as facilitators. A lot of people have the experience of leaving here, you know, go back to your hermitage, your house, or wherever you're going. And just the beatings that start. And that's when it's practice. Then you get to up back to facilitating a group. You're the one on the hot seat and everybody else is listening, and then you get the reruns, you know, after the next 2 days or whatever, 2 weeks or...
It's hard to do if you can hang in there and facilitate the voice that's telling you that. Then it has the same effect that Tom was just talking about, that's helping you to disidentify.
Uh-huh. So... what I hear you saying is...
Yeah. It works when you go visit your mother, too. It's kind of a must thing to have.
It's a family visit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, talk about that. Visiting this on family visits, do people tend to catch on to it or not? Do they tend to know that you're facilitating?
For me, it depends. I have a really good friend, and I facilitated her for probably 3 or 4 hours one night. And finally at the end of it, she said, well, I don't know what you're doing, but I really like it. I knew there was something going on. I mean, we weren't relating in the way we always had. But she was getting to express herself. She was getting to explore what was going on. And it wasn't like it was on any kind of, you know, it was just about all kinds of things. It wasn't like deep spiritual issues necessarily. Uh-huh. And my mother loved to be listened to. Because, uh-huh. I never had listened to her before, frankly.
What you realize in that is that not listening to her is a result of your own conditioning.
Oh, yeah. It's not like I don't want to listen to her. I'm doing this technique to sort of make up for that. I really, when I'm there, I really want to listen to her.
Yes.
Because she's a wonderful person.
Yes.
And she has, you know, possibly the biggest person in my life.
Yes.
And there's just a huge amount of information for me, and my love comes through in that, and I feel that for her because I'm there listening, and I really see her for who she is. I'm not seeing all these conditioned things I'm putting on her.
Yes.
And if I'm sitting there with my own agenda trying to get a point across to her or something like that, then it's just like there's this huge wall between us, and there's no understanding going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was in Virginia recently, I had an experience where I was reflective listening with my mother, and after about 5 minutes, she said, "Should I come on down?" And I started to panic, like, okay, wait, what am I supposed to do here? And what was so interesting about it was that she was saying that, she was recognizing that kind of dynamic was going on, because I was always really doing it, like, exactly, because I was so committed to not jumping in there. Mm-hmm. As I usually do with my mom. And it was fascinating because, so she said that, I sort of panicked. And then I realized that she actually really liked it.
Uh-huh.
So she kept up, like, then it just, like, everything opened up. It's like it wasn't filtered because she was poking fun at the fact that she knew what I was doing.
Yes.
Even without, you know, I didn't set up any parameters at the beginning of the conversation or anything, you know, but she caught on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she could, like, you know, make light of it, and she really liked it.
Sure, sure.
Cause
she,
yeah.
And you weren't listening to every word she said, and that's a great thing.
This has come up for me as coming from a sales background. I think reflective listening is slightly different, but it's very similar. That when someone's talking to me, if I'm a salesperson, that their main thing is, am I really listening? If I reflect back to them what they said to me, that really lets them know instantly that I am paying attention, I care about what they're talking about, and I'm really there for them.
Yes.
And that makes everything work so much better.
And you know, that's such a good point with the kind of facilitating that we do, that if you're facilitating somebody, you don't have to do reflective listening for 20 minutes or an hour or whatever it is, but to start off that way. Really lets the person know, as you say, that you are listening, you are paying attention, you are there. So if you slip in a word that's not a word that they used, and I would love for people to talk about that, if you put in a word and it's not the right word, it's okay, because the relationship has already been established.
Mm-hmm.
And that's significant, I think, in every relationship. So what about that? You hate that parrot stuff, you get so tired of just sitting there, and what kind of a facilitator am I? I haven't offered a single insight, haven't asked anybody, all I'm doing is reflecting, and so I think, well, I know what they really meant was, so I just offered that. Anybody have that one happen? What's it like?
Well, it's a really great way to be sort of bumped up against my own projections, because I can use a word that is my interpretation of what they said. It can be totally off for them.
And even though they're absolute synonyms for you.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just that little subtle shading that's going to help them see the whole thing
right.
clearly, and they look at you like,
"That's not what I said."
That's right. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. That's uh-uh.
Yeah.
And it's so. It feels like there's so much to be understood with that kind of interaction.
Mm-hmm.
about how I perceive, how the other person perceives, assumptions.
Yeah, it's dangerous, isn't it? I mean, sales, advertising is based on being able to use the exact word, the exact image to the right person because of that very thing. It only has to be off a little bit and it's complete turn off. So what do you do when you're a facilitator and you're going along swimmingly and all of a sudden you've said the wrong word and the person just stops what they're doing and says, no, that, no, that's not what I mean?
Well, what would be the exact word that you would provide?
Well, what do you mean? This is not the same as, well, what are you talking about?
I know for me it's helpful when I'm facilitated for people to, you know, maybe put out a different kind of word to just kind of shake my patterning up. And as you say, if the relationship is already established, then if I'm not carrying an agenda as the facilitator that I have to be right, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we find out what is right.
Yeah. So you say something and I say, no, that's not what I meant. And that really gives me a chance to look at that, doesn't it? What did I mean? And what is the difference? And, well, that's an interesting point. And probably something I've never looked at before. So it's not a tragedy, is it?
Right.
I mean, if you get completely off base, it's not a tragedy. Which reminds me of another one that's not a tragedy. You know, we encourage people to do reflective listening, so you sit down and you get your first client, and the bell's rung, and they come out of the shoe, and they apparently can talk without ever breathing. What do you do? Okay. But what if you think, oh my God, they said I have to reflect. So, you know, you've got to get in there somewhere. And then the person loses their train of thought, their momentum is broken, the story is ruined. What do you think?
Having been on the other end of the stick of just coming out of the chute and just endless rattling. For me, my experience of that is that that can sometimes actually be a ploy so that I don't hear a word I'm saying. I'm just going to fill up this 15 minutes and get out of here.
Unscathed.
So, as a facilitator, I can't assume that what anything that happens in the process is a problem.
Uh-huh.
So if you've been totally derailed by my saying, now wait just a second, can we, I'd just like to get this straight. This is what, how many bodies were in there? And if that derailed you, then
maybe that was helpful.
Maybe that was helpful.
Uh-huh.
That there's sort of that I have to be present to myself in the facilitation process as well. So if there's some sort of little instinctual thing that comes up and says, open your mouth now and, you know, see what comes out, that's okay to follow that. Mm-hmm. That it's not, if I have an agenda about what you should be doing, then that's sort of a different thing.
Or about what you should be doing. Right, you're facilitating me, I'm just on a marathon here,
right,
and you're really nervous because you're supposed to be reflecting, and so you've stopped listening, you've stopped being present, you've stopped everything, and then you just jump in somewhere and bring the whole thing, and you'll get to see that,
right?
But then there is the other side of it, which is, and your discomfort could still trigger you in this. It's time to bring this to at least a small time out. We need to slow things down. I don't feel like either one of us is present for this. So then, what do we say? Mary gave one.
Excuse me, just a moment.
I'm not sure I'm exactly following. So could I just recap? So then you... No, that's not... No. First I, and then I... Okay? But again, I'm having to stop, look, go over it again. It's fine. I'm probably far more present to my story than if I just told it the way I've told it over and over and over to myself and anybody else who will listen. So what are some of the ways that you can get me to slow down? How can you interrupt somebody who's really rolling along there? Techniques?
Let me make sure I'm following you here.
Yes, let me make sure I'm following you. Okay, now, help me out here.
Wow, that's really interesting. So you mean you did it, isn't it?
What else? Any other little phrases? What do those little phrases have in common?
They put the responsibility on the facilitator.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Which is a great thing to remember in facilitating. If somebody's going to look foolish, let it be you. Never, ever, ever the person is being facilitated. That's the person who's vulnerable. Now, as the facilitator, we might feel like, well, yeah, but I mean, I'm on the lead cushion. What's more vulnerable than that? But it's not vulnerable. Being the facilitator is not a vulnerable position. It's the power position. Mm-hmm. And that's why we must be extraordinarily careful about how we are with someone. So, somebody says something. You ever had this one? You're reflecting along, and the person says, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
Now, the right answer there is not, yes, you did. Hey, I'm the one listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I must have misunderstood. What did you say? Not a contest. Okay, what else do we want people to know? Is it okay to begin every sentence with so? Do you hear it when you're being facilitated? When someone is reflecting, do you hear it? Do you hear what they say? Sounds normal, doesn't it? Sounds fine.
This is a really small detail, but someone reflected my hand motions once. Hmm. Not just the silence, not just, because I found it's really helpful to reflect silence too. And that was touched on. And then, obviously, the speech. But someone reflected what my hands were doing as I was talking. And I had no idea that as I was talking about an experience, I was coning my hands in to suggest a type of trapping of something, an internal trapping. But my words weren't saying that because I hadn't caught on to the fact that that's what my process was.
Uh-huh.
And the person did that. And I said, did I do that? And it was really helpful.
Once again, you'd want to do it with great sensitivity.
Well, I was just going to say, it feels as though as we relax more into reflective listening, that happens automatically. That there is a dance between the listener and the speaker that is very much reflective of the rhythm and the tone and the... And it takes relaxing into it, but... It is all part of the reflecting. Mm-hmm.
When you're really not there, I don't know if this is an experience that is familiar to people, but do you ever, not when you're in this kind of facilitating mode, but just in the world, somebody moves and you move at the same time? Because there's nothing there to be doing anything else. Which is, I think, what you're pointing at.
Yeah.
So you're not there. So the only thing that's going on is this person, they go like that, and you go like that.
Yeah, there's definitely an energy, something happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's one of the more difficult places for me, to relax enough where you're actually reflecting the other person's energy. They're wherever they are, energetically. And then if I... And with someone who my karmic reaction is to not like that kind of energy in myself, then all of a sudden I'm a person who doesn't like that kind of energy. And that, it's a wonderful experience to be able to see that so clearly. And for me, it's not so much the way people look at something or a specific belief, but more on an energetic level.
So what I hear you saying is that I start talking, and I'm really excited about this, and I'm really high energy, and I'm waving my arms around a lot, and I hope that I will then settle down, which is not what I want to do when I'm facilitating, is it?
No.
Because that's a real step into, this is not about you, this is about me.
Well, and the message is, how you are is not all right.
Yeah.
You need to calm down.
Yeah. And you're not saying that. This is all happening non-verbally.
Yeah,
it's all happening on an energy level.
Mm-hmm. And I can be very clear that that's simply my karmic reaction. It's my conditioned reaction to the other person. It has nothing to do with listening or being with the other person or... You know, I've shifted over into having an agenda, doing life right. Do people know that place?
Doesn't it feel good, does it, when somebody
awful.
Does that kind of thing to one?
On both sides. Mm-hmm. It feels awful on both sides. Mm-hmm.
Once again, that's a big nobody's there to simply mirror somebody else's energy system, to drop whatever I might be bringing to the situation and just go with the party, whatever that is.
Which is odd, because there's a way that you can have that, you know, you can be waving your arms around being, and I can be trying to balance it, or I can be with it, which doesn't necessarily mean I'm waving my arms around.
Yes. Yeah. You're just not resisting what's going on.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm not throwing any calm down vibes.
Comes up for me again with sales is people, not just with listening to them, but when you're reflecting their energy, when you're reflecting their even their mannerisms, and you do it in a sincere manner, that they really respond to that. That my training was that there were so many different kinds of people, and this is what this person is like, let's say there's a type or whatever, and to recognize that without it being a judgment, to just reflect it, and people really appreciate that, because they're seeing themselves, whether they realize it or not, they're seeing themselves.
Oh, and you're
and they just, and if you use their name especially over and over and over again, it's another reflection of them, that you're really paying attention, you know who they are, and you're really interested in what their what their position is, what their point of view is, and you're there for them.
I was just thinking that the hardest part for me in this, the biggest trap is that it's about me if I'm facilitating. It's just, that's a real hard thing to step out of, because and there's a subconsciousness with it that just interferes with the whole process. And I was just looking at the times when I felt like I really haven't been there, it's almost kind of like, you know, it's stepping out of my conditioning. It feels like stepping off a cliff, in a sense. And I'm there, and I'm not supported in all the conditioned ways that I normally am. And there's some fear that goes along with that when I'm thinking about it. When it's actually happening, there's not. It feels wonderful. It feels very powerful.
Uh-huh.
And then after it's over, I just get slammed because I've been out of the grasp of conditioning for a little while. And so I think, you know, there's a self-consciousness that I'm trying to maintain my identity in it. And it's difficult to step out of it for all the same reasons that it's difficult to identify all the time.
And that's an awful place in facilitating.
It's the absolute worst.
The absolute worst is when your ego is facilitating.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
And as you say, when you disidentify and there's nobody there, it's heaven. Which is why I want people to facilitate. Because for many people, that's their first experience of being able to disidentify volitionally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the motivation is very strong because there you are. Mm-hmm. You know your ego can't do this.
Yeah.
If you don't disidentify, it is going to be the longest day of your entire life.
Yeah.
And so it's a very strange experience to watch ego actually be willing to step aside, because what will happen if it doesn't is that it will be revealed in a way that will not serve it in the big picture.
Yeah.
And so it steps aside.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just thinking that's the fear. It's ego's fear of that.
Yes.
It's not the fear of not being adequate. It's the fear of being adequate.
Absolutely. It's the fear of spending an extended period of time without karmic conditioning and having it be a glorious experience.
Yeah.
This is nothing egocentricity wants to have happen.
Yeah.
So don't do that. You can't do that. You're going to sound like a fool. People are going to think you're an idiot. Oh my God, why did you... Big beings afterwards. Wow, you didn't say this, and why didn't you do that? And what's the matter with it? Why? Anything to get you not to do this again.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just so powerful to have that fear and then be in it and see that it's not so.
Yes.
See that I am adequate and feel that power of being out of the grips of conditioning.
Yes.
And really, without being put in a spot like that, it would be a very, very, very rare experience in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think it has to do with the other person too, you know, that I'm willing to do that for someone.
Ooh, yes.
And I'm mostly unwilling to do it for myself.
Yeah, and it's what makes it great spiritual practice. Because there are a lot of people, especially in California, you know, who facilitate for a living.
Uh-huh.
But it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing at all. Because you're doing this basically for nothing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm getting huge
stuff
from it.
But ego isn't.
But ego isn't. Yeah.
And that's what makes the difference. This is something that does not serve ego at all. And yet you're willing to do that for the love of someone else.
Right.
For your caring about someone else's life experience. It's huge.
And just to find out that that's possible for me, that that's something that I'm capable of.
And then to take it back to something you were saying earlier, the woman who facilitated a group, great facilitator, walked out of the room, got completely identified, and stopped and said, wait a minute, if I can do that for them, I can do it for me. And it is something that I can learn to do. I can practice it. I can know what that movement is. And I can choose to make that movement. Because, you know, all of the stuff that we talk about, the ways that we indulge the voices, the ways that we, you know, go to sleep and go into wool gathering and daydreaming and all of this and wander around unconscious. I mean, you can't do that when you're facilitating. You just can't do it. If you wander off for a second, you know it. Okay, anything else that you can think about that we need to let people know? Do you get over the self-consciousness? How do you get over it? There you are just repeating back to them what they said. And then you get out there because they've been talking for a long time and it's six paragraphs. And what do you reflect? You just try to start at the beginning and reflect the whole story. You can't remember that. What do you reflect? The last sentence? The last word? How do you know? What do you do?
The best you can.
The best you can. Pick something and reflect it, right?
Well, for me, what helps me get past the self-consciousness, which will still come in and be there, is seeing the process work is the magic that happens with reflective listening, that it actually is doing something that's facilitating the other person's process. And I think to become interested in that and then move away from the self-conscious, the self-consciousness.
Yeah, so stay with it.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going to be uncomfortable in the beginning. Yes, it gets easier as time goes on. Find people and practice with them. Tell your friends and family, I'm doing this thing, I want to practice with you, do you mind? And then see. At the end of it, find out, was it helpful for them? Did they see the benefit? Did they enjoy it? Do they want to get together and do it again? Watch how many yeses you get.
Well, and it seems as though staying with it despite the self-consciousness is another way to challenge egocentricity, because that's all egocentricity getting bent out of shape about, I'm not getting to say anything, I'm sounding like a robot, and just keep doing that, and have that opportunity to challenge.
Yeah. Okay.